Oh, that's a good one. Okay, let's go. So, welcome to this edition of Edgy Ideas Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to have our guest, Giles Hutchins. I've known Giles for many years. Giles is a coach, a speaker, an author of many great books. He's currently chairman of the Future Fit Leadership Academy, and he's just written a new book called Leading by Nature. Giles, you're very welcome to Edgy Ideas. How are you doing?
Oh, it's lovely to be here with you, Simon. As you say, we've known each other for many years, so it's really nice to be connected and to be on this edgy conversation with you.
Yeah, so what we're going to do today, we're going to start by talking about your book. Tell us, what does leading by nature mean? A process of becoming a regenerative leader, and we'll see where that conversation takes us.
So,
So, yeah, leading by nature, it's a good title.
yeah. So it's rather than us sort of leading nature or as sort of learning from nature, it's actually sort of about attuning into nature. So I mean the way I'd sort of break that up is our own inner and outer nature, so the leader inner
Yeah.
nature, connecting with our own psyche, our own consciousness within and all around, and our outer nature, the way in which we relate, the way in which we engage. And then also the inner and outer nature of the organization. So the inner nature of the organization being the culture, the values, the decision-making processes, and the outer nature of the organization being the value propositions and the products and services and the way in which the organization shows up and creates impact in the world.
Good, good. So, I mean, I was always struck how people separate. I think one of the big things about modernity is how we separated nature. So we take from nature, we use nature, we extract from nature. And the big kind of learning point I had was about us actually being in nature. It's part of us. It's in us. We are nature. We're not kind of separate. So does that come into your work? That's kind of how you're thinking about this, is it?
Yeah, I mean, essentially underpinning all of this is a worldview shift from separation, from separateness, from thinking that we're separate from our own selves. Our own sense of self has unfortunately got twisted into separateness, separate from each other and separate from life, from nature itself. And that has created all sorts of problems for us. And we're shifting from that, what I call mechanistic materialism, into quantum complexity, which is a recognition that actually we are part of life, we're never separate from it, and that we can work with life. In fact, working with life creates all sorts of benefits and advantages for us as leaders and our organizations.
Good, good. So I've done a lot of reading, as you know, on eco leadership, on systemic leadership, on complexity theory. One thing I found with a lot of that work is it's quite hard to apply into practice. So all my kind of thinking now is about application and working in organizations. And I know you're very keen on that as well. So can you tell us about a bit about some of the applications of this kind of new worldview, how it kind of works for you in practice?
Yeah, so I think a key part is to start being able to sense and see the organization as a living system. So what does that mean? Well, at the moment, we're sort of being conditioned that almost the organization is a machine. You know, it's sort of the hierarchy, the structures, the power and control methods, and so forth. But rather than seeing it like that, and of course, there's some value in that. So it's not throwing that out completely. We need that approach, that mindset, but it's not being caught up in that mechanistic mindset. It's using that as a tool to get the job done in certain situations. But actually, sitting within that, a deeper context is seeing that the organization is full of relationships. It's full of conscious and unconscious stuff. And that the sort of messy, unpredictable human relationships, the chat next to the coffee machine, down the corridor, over Zoom, Snapchat, all of this actually informs how we show up. And how do we encourage us to bring more of ourselves into the workplace? You know, one of the biggest inefficiencies, according to Harvard Business School studies, is that we are reducing down who we are when we come into the workplace. You know, we're actually managing others' impressions of ourselves, we're holding back aspects of ourselves, and then trying to sort of devise ways to be more creative and innovative, whereas actually all we need to do is just bring more of our humanity into the workplace. And so tuning into nature, becoming more connected, and working with human nature, psychology, I think is really an important step for living organizations to be able to adapt, to be able to deal with the increased volatility that we're finding.
Yeah, bringing more humanity. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I've been working in really diverse workspaces recently. I've been working in car manufacturing in the US. I've been working in banks, and I look at these places and I wonder, they have the rhetoric of being more human and being more authentic, and I'm thinking, how does this work in practice when these kind of places are built like machines? And they are, they're built like machines, building machines, they're finance machines, they're manufacturing machines. And then, you think about kind of China and the huge manufacturing outsource there. And I'm wondering, I'm asking myself the question about kind of how you, what does it mean to humanize these types of organizations?
I mean, there are sort of different flavors depending on what feels right for the organization. But I think the move towards more self-organizing teams is it can be a healthy one, which brings with it all sorts of challenges. You know, sort of shift from a kind of parent-child dynamic into an adult one, to use that simple language, does mean that we then need to take more personal responsibility. We need to feel more engaged and more. I think it's more than empowerment; it's actually sharing power. So that has to start with leadership, but also starts with each of the individuals wanting to actually give more of themselves and participate in that way. But you talk about manufacturing organizations; there are now quite a few manufacturing organizations. Gore Associates, for instance, I'm thinking of, and there's others like Morningstar, who have started using these self-organizing teams. And what they found is that people, you know, are able to actually self-select, make decisions that are beneficial for the customer, that are, you know, for their own health, for the team, in ways that, you know, the old mindset thinks, oh gosh, you know, people can't possibly make those decisions; they're not equipped to do that. So I think unlocking and trusting people, and a lot of this is about trust, creating a culture where we feel we can actually share power with others, does provide meaningful benefit to the organization as well as to the individuals.
Sure. I mean, there was a very famous study done by the Tavistock Institute many years ago on coal mining, and they were looking at people working individually and getting day rates and piece rates and the amount of work they did. And then they observed another group of workers who were self-organized and managed and working together and getting collective bonuses working together. And the latter was kind of hugely more successful, and it really transformed manufacturing. They took these ideas and they took them into Scandinavia and stuff, and they really kind of made a big difference. So you're right. And the other thing about this worldview is you can't really talk about this without thinking about even the greater picture about the amount of stuff we manufacture. Like, I mean, just the whole kind of picture of mass consumption and mass production and kind of just how we live is kind of part of this, isn't it? I mean, to humanize the workplace is also to humanize our kind of whole lives, isn't it? And kind of rethink the big picture. I think we have to be kind of holistic about that.
I mean, I've what's been interesting. I mean, I've been working with one particular organization for quite a few months now, a couple of years, and it's been interesting to see people change, because it takes, as you know, it takes a long time for people to actually change behaviors. But what was interesting, we ran a session here just the other day, is how this particular group of people, different levels of hierarchy in the business, have been on this journey over the last couple of years, and how they were reflecting on how it's getting them to help them to challenge other parts of their lives. How they show up with their children, how they approach education, how they spend their weekends. So, you know, so I would like to feel that we can create environments that actually stimulate us and make us become better human beings. Because you're right, everything needs to change. Our whole way of living has got caught up in a worldview that is actually now creating massive problems, you know, all sorts of massive problems, as you know, like social inequality and rampant depression and mental health issues, right the way through to actually destroying the fabric of life on Earth. So there are big challenges, and I think a lot of that, perhaps all of it, is stemming from this worldview of separateness, of hyper competition, of mechanistic thinking, which is a useful tool. But it's become so dominant that now we apply it to pretty much all aspects of our lives with real challenges.
Yeah, and I think it's just important to recognize that there has been some gains and the mechanistic, like I call it, controller leadership. As you know, that I have the four discourses: controller, therapist, messiah, and eco-leadership. And more, I'm saying to people, yeah, you need some controller leadership. We do, if you're running a hospital, you actually want it to be efficient. You do want your operation on time. You do, you do. If you're going for a zero carbon organization, you have to kind of measure your output. You have to measure your waste. These things kind of are important. But they have to be balanced with this more humane kind of approach, this more eco-leadership approach, this more ecosystem approach, this more holistic approach. And getting people in. I mean, what I find in my work is that people get it. I mean, people employ me because they get these ideas, they like them, but they very quickly flip back to kind of let's say old kind of ways, old behaviors or normative behaviors when they're under pressure. It's like the, when the targets are not being met, when the pressure from the hierarchy is coming down, or when the sales are not kind of meeting their goals, then they flip back to controller leadership or messiah leadership. So it's what's your experience of trying to kind of make this more sustainable?
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, it speaks to this horizontal development, vertical development language, if you like, which I'll explain in a moment. But to your point around the different discourses, they were transcend and include. So we've always got that control. We need that. We almost need to have nailed that at some point in time in our lives or got comfortable with it, because that's actually creates a good system. It's a foundation. And the same with the therapist. There's lots of useful aspects of that that we need within that discourse. So we're not losing those, and we're not saying that this is better. This is actually inclusive of them, and yet sees more of life, sees more of the organization. And why? What I do is I try and work with senior leaders or key people in the team, and also key people across the organization that I call systemic enablers, that are already on the cusp. And it's not horizontal development. Okay, we can cover some of that. And what do I mean by that? How do you deal with certain tensions during the day? How do we develop feedback? How do we look at emotional intelligence? That's all useful stuff. It's more vertical development, which is where are you at? How are you? Where's your meaning making? And where are you shifting? How are you going through a shift? And because if you can help people through that shift, that then becomes more difficult to go backwards on. You can still go, you still go back, and you're dead right in times of challenge, or when you need to make a quick impulsive decision, or some problems happened, you revert back. But if you've gone through that worldview shift, you might revert back temporarily, but you notice it yourself and you go, oh gosh, this is wrong. This is feeling wrong. This is actually taking me out of flow. I'm not seeing so much. I'm not able to trust my intuition. I'm not able to sense the living system. I'm not able to make the right decisions. You can feel it inside yourself. So then you self-right yourself. Rather than looking for some external support, you actually have the own navigation system to be able to go, okay, I'm lurching back. That's fine. But now let me bring myself forward. So that's what I found makes it sustainable, is helping people at that worldview consciousness level rather than just the outer tools and techniques.
I read your book, and I was interested in your systemic enablers idea. I do this network mapping piece, and it's interesting because what I find with many people's understanding of leadership is, even though you can talk about eco-leadership, systemic leadership, holistic leadership, however, whatever language you want to use, it's people still carry around with them kind of like a hardwired kind of idea of kind of individual transformational charismatic kind of leader. And what I find interesting is when I'm working with people thinking about how we kind of create change in organizations, is they immediately think about how they can influence others. And I shift this to kind of your perspective of systemic enablers. So I'm always thinking about, imagine that you had no power to make any changes yourself, but you have to kind of create changes in that system. Who would you connect? How would you create nodes of change which can lead to other change? How would you create clusters in that organization, getting so and so from department A to, with so and so from department B, to kind of think together, and you start kind of getting people to think differently. It's just horizontal, it's more lateral way of thinking, and but that takes work. I've noticed that really takes work, because people kind of are hardwired. They've had it ingrained in them since school days, that kind of the leadership comes from kind of up there somewhere.
Well, this is it. And actually, that your network analysis tool was definitely helped influence. We do systemic mapping and so forth, which and one of the influences was the tool that I learned from you. And this, and looking not just at how we map out, but actually then being able to sense where does it, and trusting other ways of knowing, you know, mm-hmm. so in your gut, yeah. actually sensing, well, that person's sort of on the cusp a bit, they're starting to see things a bit differently. And then if you can identify those key people, what I call systemic enablers, and then work with them as a small circle, and these can be completely different levels in the hierarchy, completely different parts of the business. In fact, the more diverse, the better in many ways. Then you've got this little circle, and I say little, it could be 6, it could be 12, and you start working them as an action learning group. Then they build a practice together. They share deeply through dialogue, and they gain that sense of community whilst sensing into the organization as a living system. And that gives some commonality, as it were, or some coherence whilst the organization is going through all sorts of massive changes, which is most organizations are in these days, you know, great volatility. So you have that group that help, and they act as feelers. They have their own networks, they do their own network analyses, they identify their own little systemic enablers. And so you're almost finding imaginal cells, if you like, in the organization that can help with the metamorphosis, rather than it having to be the coaches or external advisors. You're sort of inoculating it from within.
Yeah, and that's so important. I did a really interesting piece of work. I think you've met Lynn Sedgemoor. She's was working in the FE sector. She was head of a national FE leadership body at the time, and we worked together. And now we worked over like 12 or 18 months on one project, and it was about strategic democracy. So we were thinking about kind of strategy normally comes from top down. How can we kind of invert this? And we were kind of work with sales, small groups, kind of workers from kind of right across the whole organization. And they worked in action learning sets, they worked together. And then we brought them together for kind of an annual event. All these kind of ideas were bubbling up, and we were kind of knitting them together and weaving them together. And in the end, the whole kind of annual event was run by kind of people at what would be considered a low level in the organization. So it's your secretaries, your administrators, you know, and we gave them kind of the budget and said, you run the event. And they took this up with kind of real joy. It was amazing, like, you know, and it was one of the best events we've ever had. It was really, really powerful. It was kind of there's something about kind of being subversive in this, and actually kind of subverting power and giving people opportunities, and people kind of love to step into that space when you do it, rather than kind of this kind of top-down kind of empowerment idea where I'm going to give you power. But it's actually kind of just allowing it to kind of flow more naturally, like you say in your book.
Yeah, there's a real difference between empowerment and actually being willing to share power or giving power. Or, you know, one is sort of almost, as you say, almost sort of giving permission for someone and helping someone sort of feel that. And the other is actually saying, you know, I see you. We are equal. We are here. And here you go. And I trust you now. There is a trust involved in you having a go and failing and learning and exploring, because that's how you're going to grow and learn. And that's the shift from essentially a parent child into an adult. So you're right, subverting, turning things around, coming from different angles, mashing things up. There's all sorts of tools these days, you know, like swarms and hackathons, where you bring different people in, and that really helps, you know, shake things up a bit and give different perspectives.
It does. What, getting a bit more personal, Giles, what kind of has really influenced you in your life to kind of awaken you to the work you do and give you such a drive and purpose to follow that work? What's happened in your life? What kind of would you point to which kind of has awoken you to this?
Well, I had a couple of profound moments when I was about sort of 7. I mean, I was already probably being quite a challenging child and sort of challenging and asking questions about everything. But I had a couple of sort of out-of-body experiences that kind of, I don't know, showed me something. I didn't really know what to make sense of them at the time, but they were deep experiences in nature where I had this sense of sort of interconnectedness. And then about 15 years old, it was actually a maths teacher at the time. I took my maths O-level a year early, and we had a free lesson. Showed us, he was a vegan, and showed us some videos of animals being tested on live in laboratories and being skinned alive in factory farms and so forth. And it really shocked me badly. And two things happened to me that day. One, I saw how it affected everyone else. Everybody was affected by it. And yet within a couple of hours, most people had moved on and just sort of forgotten about it. And so that showed me something about human nature, you know, about how the herd mentality, how easy it is just to sort of go along with whatever, even though if you know it's wrong. And the second was that the wheels came off the road for me around civilization. I realized that actually civilization wasn't civilized. And that was quite an awakening for me. I went through a bit of a rogue, became a bit of an activist. And in that journey, realized that a lot of the activism, or pretty much all the activism I got involved with, was about blame, was about othering, was quite angry. And that actually everybody seemed to be keeping on coming up with sort of business being the reason why we do these things. So I made a promise to myself to go into business and find out what is really going on. Is there a strategy? And I suppose that's what's happened. I then nearly got stuck in the system because, of course, you know, you get involved and you have to get the next pay review and the next salary to pay the whatever. So I nearly got stuck. But then I made good on my promise, and the unconscious kind of awoke in me again. And that's led me to doing what I'm doing now.
Interesting. And in this kind of work we're both doing, what do you find the most kind of challenging? I mean, what do you bump into, which kind of you really struggle with?
Well, I think this is a very interesting time we're in. And so there are riptides. And, you know, okay, you and I have been talking about these sorts of things for some time now. So in some way, it can feel like, oh, gosh, you know, things are happening to such an extent that people are now interested in this stuff. But at the same token, all sorts of stuff is coming out of the collective unconscious that is creating real challenges. So for me, it's discernment is probably the most sort of healthy tension I'm working with at the moment, is to discern when I can truly help someone as a transformative coach on their journey, and when actually it's I'm not the right person for them, or the organization's not right for me, to really sense that. And maybe if I'm on a journey with someone, to actually know, actually now you need to go and see a psychotherapist or something else. I think that is really my edge at the moment, as I'm getting deeper and deeper involved in quite transformative work, is knowing when to say no, knowing, trusting my intuition on what are the right paths for me to choose, because I only have a certain amount of energy. And I need to spend my time wisely, because I also have, you know, a young family as well. And I could become a workaholic if I allowed myself to be. So I have to keep that in check a bit. I don't know if any of that resonates with you, Simon. What about you? What's your edge?
Keeping myself in good spirit. I just wrote a recent blog saying I got troubled at the beginning of the year. I think whether it was a bit of a long COVID, or whether it was I got really impacted by the Ukraine war, I got very involved in thinking about that, and it really troubled me and continues to trouble me. So my mood went down a bit, and that was keeping myself kind of healthy. I have a young family too, so keeping that kind of balance there. Saying no, like I get offered to do an awful lot of diverse things, which is incredibly enriching, but kind of saying no and prioritizing the right things, really. You know, it's like health and family kind of really important. But after that, then you know, where do you work? And I really like working in challenging environments, because I'm a wannabe kind of anthropologist at one level, because I go into organizations as an anthropologist. You know, it's like I go into car manufacturing, it's like I spent 3 days walking the floor of production lines, and I just love it. Like, you know, it's like really kind of I'm learning, I'm soaking up, kind of talking to people. And then I go into a big bank in London, and I kind of soak that up, and then I go and work with the Catholic Church and the Jesuits in Rome, and then I get a gig with the Church of England. And so you go through these very diverse places, you know, from health to education to finance. And for me, this sort of doing the network myself is kind of the work, It's like, you know, and how that comes out, I mean, writing and sharing, kind of cross-fertilizing ideas across these places is kind of what really kind of inspires and engages me. My edge is kind of not to do too much of it, and kind of not to kind of find myself sort of overwhelmed by it all, and sometimes it does feel a little bit like that.
Well,
That's my edge.
yeah, I like that because it reminds me of one of the things I use in organizational development, which is based on living systems, which is this concept I actually explored through I found in an ancient text somewhere, reading when researching one of my books. But essentially, you know, life is full of this tension of divergence, opening up, diversity, exploring, you know, soaking things up, having that variety, convergence, bringing together, aligning. And out of that tension of divergence and convergence is emergence, nature's creative advance, the way nature flows, the way organizations, the way you and I adapt and learn and evolve. And it's this healthy tension for me. As you say, you get excited by divergence and different things. And the convergence for me has to be, well, how is this aligning to my deeper essence? How is this aligning to helping shift the system? And I've had a challenge around that because I used to. I look back on it now and I probably frown on it a little bit, but I used to sort of like, well, look, if this organization isn't serious about, you know, becoming a sustainability or more sustainable organization or a more healthy organization, then why am I spending my time working with a leader? I'm not like that so much now. I do have, I've kept my diversity open, and I feel that if this leader has the capacity to truly transform and shift their worldview, then that's good with me. The fact they might be in, I don't know, dirtier water or whatever analogy you use is neither here nor there. It's still good work to do.
It is, and yeah, and what I think as well is that you know the people who are most troubled, the organizations which are most troubled, are the ones who need it the most. But also that it's I was like you, I was a social activist, a bit of an anarchist when I was younger, and kind of on all the marches and demos, and it was a very kind of wounded self, kind of victim kind of mindset about, you know, the greedy other and the big other, but you know, without any understanding about what was going on inside these places. So for me, even if I don't change them, learning what's going inside of these places and actually kind of using that knowledge elsewhere is very, very useful in my writings, in my thinking, and kind of in that organization. So it's not, you know, we still got to think about ecosystems. It's not just me working in an organization where I either win or I fail at there. It's like that's part of the ecosystem we live and work in. That's part of our planet. So I'm gonna kind of, my job is to help to make some sense of that. My tiny little kind of a bit of work I do in this planet is to make a bit of sense of that and kind of spread that knowledge and kind of use it. So for me, it's always thinking in that ecosystem way. This is part of a system, and like, you know, it's not necessarily good or bad, but it's part of an ecosystem, and it is what is. And kind of we have to kind of work with that and across there.
Well, that's a good point because the old, let's call it the current worldview, the dying worldview, again, separation, mechanistic, it likes either ors. It likes black whites. And there's a lot of narrative at the moment about black whites. You see it coming out in all sorts of things. It came out a lot in COVID, it comes out of the climate crisis, and it creates this either or, whether you're either with us or against us or whatever. And actually, what came across for me when you were just sharing that is actually how this is all live, warm data. Let's explore it, and let's actually show how the interconnection. Let's explore the tensions between those rather than breaking them out into dialectic oppositions. Let's actually explore and dialogue with the system, and that way, healing can start occurring in some way.
Learning, healing, sharing—it's kind of building those connections. I just think is really, really important rather than kind of separating them. Do you does faith and spirituality play a part in the work you do, or in your own worldview?
Interesting. I mean, the word religion, I actually prefer the sort of the Greek version of what that word really means, which is a sort of a way of living, a sacred, recognizing the sacredness of life. And so, yes, I do. I mean, I try and remind myself as much as possible, have a little practice, you know, waking up each morning and going to bed each night, very much honoring this experience of life, which I find utterly awe-inspiring and challenging. So yes, I see each. I try and remind myself all the time of each interaction, each moment, spirituality in terms of having spiritual experiences. I feel, again, you know, one could perhaps explore what do I mean by a spiritual experience, but moments where my consciousness has shifted and I've had some form of epiphany have been really informative for me throughout my life, and I think continue to inform me. And I was really heartened when we came to this ancient woodland here 3 years ago, how when I started sleeping out in the woods more, how the way I used to dream as a child, sort of this kind of lucid dreaming and flying in my dreams and all these sorts of things, which I thought had long gone, you know, 25 years of corporate life had smashed that out of me, actually was started coming back again. And so even that, even my dream time, I see can be a form of spiritual experience. So yes, I would say that has informed and continues to inform my way of working and living.
Yeah, good. I mean, it's a different topic, but it interests me how spirituality and work gets played out. I write about it in my books, and sometimes it's very problematic that it can be very instrumental. People kind of use spirituality or well-being or some meditation practices as a way of getting people to be more productive, basically, which is kind of an antithesis of kind of what should be happening. But I'm kind of interested in kind of when you're thinking about integration, about holism, around how spirituality and faith sometimes can be very divisive, religions can be very divisive, and sometimes they can be very holistic. And it kind of it's a long standing interest of mine. So just exploring that.
Yeah.
Well, Charles, we're coming to the end. It's been really lovely talking to you. I asked my guests two questions at the end, so I'm going to ask you. Do you have any thoughts, drawing on your work and your experiences, of what it means to live a good life and to create the good society?
Yes, I would possibly say that that's what I'm trying to do with regenerative leadership, to help this experience of life become a more richer, conscious experience where we connect with ourselves in a more deeper way, connect with each other, and connect with life through our organization. So my work really is pointing towards a more deeper, a good, beautiful, and true life. So yes, I would say that's what I'm trying to do with regenerative leadership, essentially about a deeper love of life, love of ourselves, each other, and the world around us. So yeah, I think that's part of my answer.
Well, thank you very much, Giles. It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you for participating in Edgy Ideas, and I hope to kind of come and visit you in your woods sometime.
Oh, thank you, Simon. It's been great talking with you. Thank you. Cheers.
Goodbye. Cheers. And everybody, I just want to say a couple of things. One is the wonderful James Lovelock died last week, 103 years old, made a great contribution with Gaia Theory. Worth reading some of his work, and an amazing person. The other thing is we've got an advanced coaching course coming up in September, online coaching course. Pop me an email if you'd like to participate in that. And we've got a webinar coming up in September with a First Nations speaker, Michelle McMahon. She's going to be talking about First Nation worldviews, which is very, very interesting. So look on our website, www.ecoleadershipinstitute.org. Thank you, and speak to you all soon.